CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 353, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. BYU ended the football season with a big win against Western Michigan and a great performance by Zach Wilson. What does that mean for 2019? We recap the 2018 season and look forward to next year, including some bold predictions. We also answer the question as to whether the wheels are coming off for the basketball team. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. Matt, it's that rare occasion where you've seen a movie that I have not.
I never thought the day would come.
Yeah, there's been one other. I feel like there was one other last year or maybe earlier this year.
There was something I saw on opening night.
Yeah, and I didn't see it for a week or two after.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
Yeah,
must have been great.
You saw Aquaman today.
I did see Aquaman today.
Was it all wet?
Oh, stop it.
Oh, I kid.
I don't know. It was interesting. It was a little hard to follow because the story was very fluid.
Very good. So I'll see it eventually. Matt, the other thing I want to talk about is something that no one wants me to talk about.
Oh, I can think of three or four things that fit in this category, and that's just like really quickly. So why don't you just go ahead and tell us what it is?
So I was in two fantasy football championships this past week.
Mm-hmm.
I lost them both by a total of 8 points.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I lost our family one by one. My brother.
Loser.
And then I lost a local one here, by 7.
And loser again. Look at you.
And all I needed to do was start Lamar Jackson over Derek Carr, and I miffed it.
Harbaugh figured that out. Wait a minute. Stop. Full stop. Did you just say your mistake was not starting Lamar Jackson over Carr?
Hey. There
are you serious?
Carr was projected higher, and I thought Lamar was going to get figured out. He was.
I am rubbing my temples right now.
He had a bad matchup.
Serenity now.
So that was.
Are you serious?
My local league. Yeah.
You are serious right now.
Yeah, I had bad quarterbacks this year. My quarterbacks originally from the draft. I waited on quarterbacks, and I waited a round too late. And I had great – the rest of my roster was great, but my quarterbacks were Derek Carr and who was my other terrible quarterback? Somebody else that was terrible. And then I picked up Jackson for the playoffs and had been riding him, and I got too cute, man. I got too cute. Just keep riding Lamar Jackson, and I win that championship. In the family league, I just got beat. It was just one of those weeks, you know.
I'm just still shocked that you were left to a choice between Carr and Jackson. A, how did you end up in that scenario? I know you kind of described it just now, but
yeah, I waited. It was a rounds, you know, draft, and I just waited. I waited, and I thought there were just always better values. There were always better values. Like I had Schuster, I had Kamara, I had. Carson, I had a good team. It was a good team. It's a deep league, too. It's like 16 teams.
Yeah, apparently.
Very deep league, and I just waited one round too long.
I waited one round too long.
My other terrible quarterback in that league was Matthew Stafford.
Oh, boy. I don't want to know anymore.
Well, when I drafted both of them, I thought one of them will pop. Like, John Gruden says... John Gruden says that Carr is like one of the best quarterbacks ever.
Of course he says that.
And it's going to be great when they don't draft a quarterback and everybody's like shocked. So one other non-related thing was Chris Gregory in an email recommended that I watch Cobra Kai. Have you seen this YouTube series, Cobra Kai?
I've seen advertisements for it. I have not seen an episode.
I think you have to pay to get it. I think you have to pay for like YouTube Red, and I already pay for too many streaming services. I pay for Hulu, I pay for Netflix. I am soon, whenever they launch it, going to pay for the Disney streaming service. So I feel like I can't do it, but I would like to watch that show a lot.
I would like to watch that show, not a lot.
No, it looks great. Hey,
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't look good to me at all.
I'm going to, what is that? Bicycle kick you to the head? What's that move that he does? Crane kick? Crane kick. I'm going to crane kick you to the head.
I'm not even sure what to do with the fact that you just called it a bicycle kick. A. Well, B. I'm not sure you're physically capable of doing either of the things that you just described, so I'm not worried.
You know, when Karate Kid came out, I was convinced that you could not block that move. Like, it was unblockable, the crane kick, until Karate Kid 2 came out and ruined all of that. Apparently, it was very blockable. Anyway, all right, Matt, let's go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, it's time for Cougars in the Pros. With the first pick in the NFL draft,
sit down, get
the
out.
Oakland Raiders select Derek Carr.
Apparently. Oakland Raiders and Adam Mangum's fantasy team.
So
way to go, Mangum.
Yeah, shut up.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for him.
Yeah, you're an idiot. All right, Matt. Jamal Williams had one of probably his best day in the NFL. The coaching change has been good for him. 15 carries for 95 yards, 6 catches for 61 yards, and a couple of nice blocks to keep Aaron Rodgers alive. And he had this really beautiful touchdown run right down the sideline. So good job for Jamal doing what I thought the Packers should have been doing with him all along, which is give him 10 to 15 rushes a game. Let him get in a rhythm. He's a rhythm guy, right? This give him 3 or 4 carries a game was never going to work. He's not that guy. So it's good.
No.
Good.
Yeah, he's not that guy.
Daniel Sorensen of the Chiefs had his best game of the year, finishing with 8 tackles and a pass deflection. Michael Davis of the Chargers also had a nice day, 3 tackles, 2 pass deflections. And Bronson Kafusi had his first stat of the year for the New York Jets. He hit Aaron Rodgers once, had a quarterback hit. So there you go. And then Matt Jimmer is quite good at basketball.
Yeah, he's above average, I believe.
Shanghai Sharks. Now, here's his stat line for the year. Are you ready for this? This is his stat line for the year. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready to hear it.
Let me see. Where was it? I looked at it. I'm like, that's not him. I was looking at somebody else's stats. He's averaging 30.8 points a game. 45% shooting from three-point land. 95% from the free throw line, 6.1 rebounds, 5.6 assists, 3.3 steals. He's averaging 40 minutes a game. Okay. You know what the craziest part about this? He's third in the league in scoring at 38.3. Third.
That's insane.
That's crazy. That league must be nuts. All right. So Matt, a couple of things before we talk about the Western Michigan game. First of all, my two first novels in my two series are still on sale for 99 cents. That'll be in the show notes. Pete Crosser is the name of the epic fantasy, and Caliban's World is the name of the science fiction one. You can find them on Amazon or any place else that ebooks are sold, and on sale for the rest of the year for 99 cents. So far, I don't believe anybody has bought them, not from this show. They're doing fine. I'm just saying I give these ads. I don't think it's working. Is my pitch bad? Do I need more of a pitch?
Maybe you need more of a pitch.
More of a pitch. One of them is a fantasy novel, and the other one is science fiction. If you like Brandon Sanderson, you'll find my books are not as good as his, but still good.
Yeah, I feel like you could do better than that.
If you like George R. R. Martin, I'm nothing like him. That's still not good?
Not as helpful.
Okay. All right. On the Caliban's World one, it's like Shakespeare mixed with Star Wars mixed with Les Miserables, except it's really not like any of those.
See, you were doing okay until right at the end.
It actually is kind of like Shakespeare mixed with Star Wars because it is based on Shakespeare. So anyway, go check them out if you are so inclined. We've also been asked recently over the last few months by several people, including Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney!
About how they can support the podcast. We do this for free, and it will continue to be free. I'm not planning on charging. But we will. This is our.
We're first... not planning. We're not planning at this time. You have to. You have to use the like small print speak.
No, I
when
don't.
You say stuff like
no,
that.
No, I don't. We don't need attorneys around here, Mr. Businessman.
No, whatever.
We're not planning on in the near future.
See, now you're qualifying it.
Oh my gosh, weird. You're terrible. At this time, we are not planning on charging for the podcast. But what we are going to do is we're going to set up a way for you, either through Patreon or Podbean, and we'll announce all the details in the coming weeks, to support the podcast by a voluntary subscription. All right? And there will be a couple different levels, and some of those levels will have prizes attached to them. Okay? They will have prizes attached to them, so or rewards or whatever you want to call them. So that'll be coming shortly. But for those of you, including Sweeney, who want to support the podcast, I know he and several of you have been listening pretty much the entire 8 years we've been on the air. And you're like, wow, we've gotten, you know, a lot of mediocre listening time out of this. We want to give back mediocrely, right? And you can. You'll be able to do that here in a few weeks. More details to come. All right, Matt, we had a bowl game. And BYU
won.
We did.
We went bowling.
And in our halftime show, we were a little down on the Cougars because the first half wasn't good, but both of us were confident they would come back and win, which they did. I was not anticipating the offensive like explosion that they had in the second half.
Yeah, that got crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. The offensive line, which had seemed to struggle a little bit in the first half, became dominant. I mean, I don't know that. It felt like in the second half, every time that BYU ran the football, the opposing defenders were 5 yards down the field, right? Like as when the running back got the ball, right? And it was pretty good. Overall impressions from this game, does it change any how you feel about how the season went or players or coaching?
Well, finishing 7-6 feels a lot better than finishing 6-7, and feels way better than only winning 4 games. So I think that, you know, if you look back after the bowl game and you think about the season, and you know what we thought we'd get out of the extra practices and what does that mean going in, I don't know that it drastically changed my view of what I expect to see going forward or what I think this offseason means, but it did make me. It did make me feel good that we went out there and did what we did. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like,
oh, it does.
The importance of the game, I'm not going to get carried away for the 18 of 18 and all this. But in terms of kind of what we were hoping we'd get out of this game with a win and a solid performance, I think we'll get those things.
So in this game, the offense averaged how many yards per play here? 9.42 yards per play. When was the last time we averaged 9 yards per play in a game?
I don't know the answer to that.
Wagner, 2015.
Ooh, who was the quarterback?
In 2015 against Wagner, that was Mangum. Was the quarterback.
Okay, excellent.
Tanner was the quarterback then. Okay. Though Western Michigan's defense is not good, they're better than Wagner's. Okay? Can we say that?
Yeah, but is it Wagner or is it Wagner? Just want to make sure we're saying it right.
Per pass play, BYU averaged 15 yards per pass play. When was the last time BYU had double digits average per pass play?
Jake Heaps.
Wagner, same game.
Nuts. I'm waiting for the Jake Heaps comparison. There's got to be one in here somewhere.
There isn't. Jake Heaps was terrible. We'll get to that in a second. Everybody thinks his freshman year was good. It wasn't, but we'll get there. We have not, against an FBS team, had an offensive game like this in, like, 8 years. Okay? And Western Michigan is not the worst FBS team we've played.
Amen to that.
During that time period. They're not good, but they're not... I mean, the defense was bad. But I want to talk about our defense, BYU's defense. This was a top 50 offense that we basically completely dismantled the entire game. They didn't look good in the first half, and then, boy, did they look bad in the second half. By Western Michigan, I mean, not BYU's defense. Was dominant, even though they were missing several key players, including Kaufusi, right? So Matt, do you feel any different about this defense now than you did, say, 5, 6, 8 weeks ago?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just admit that I do. You know, I've said some things about the defense, even in the past 3 or 4 weeks, that I feel like we're probably over the top. The defense was pretty good, and the defense was very good in the bowl game against Western Michigan.
They adjusted really well.
They played really well. I mean, if you look at the statistics, which I've had forced myself to do since we had a long conversation about how I wouldn't be surprised if we had a new defensive coordinator and all this, and looking at the numbers, that comment makes no sense. And if you look at how the defense performed against Western Michigan and just on the eye test, that comment makes no sense.
Well, I mean, you made those comments after, of course, the second half meltdown against Utah, right?
Yes.
Which was terrible, right?
Which was a disaster.
And the coaching staff defensively has to take some ownership for that, right? They do. They need to take ownership for that. But if you look at overall where this team finished up, this is the best defense we've had, statistically speaking, in probably 4 years, okay? And Tuiaki seems to be figuring things out. The other thing is, Taki Taki had one of those amazing defensive player games.
He was in a zone.
I saw on Twitter, somebody tweeted out, well, who should get the player of the game? And everyone's like, it's Wilson. What other thing there is? I'm not sure it is Wilson. I'm not sure Wilson was the best player that day. I know he was perfect and whatever else. I mean, it was a really good game. He threw 18 passes, okay? So, and extremely well, and deserves to get MVP, right? That's fine. But Taki Taki was equally as good on the other side of the ball.
Had almost as many tackles.
Right, right.
And like 6 or 7 for a loss plus.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about a defensive player being able to take over a game. And I wouldn't say this performance was quite there, but he was everywhere, everywhere.
Well, that middle linebacker position seemed to be it. And I think you and I talked about this a couple times towards the end of the season. I don't think he was healthy towards the end of the year. He seemed slow. He just didn't seem the explosive player he had been earlier in the year and earlier in his career. And he looked, I mean, he was chasing guys down from behind. And again, this wasn't some elite offense, right? You know, but this was a good offense.
It was a directional Michigan school. Yeah.
So, you know, but 19 tackles? A sack, you know, several tackles for loss. I mean, it was an impressive performance by Mr. Taki Taki. So, and a great way for him to go out and build a really nice film role for the draft. Hey, you want me to play middle linebacker? I can do that.
Look what I did.
Yeah, yeah. So again, I mean, you have to know the opponent, and I get it. Anyway, yeah, but Matt,
19 tackles. I don't care who you're playing. 19 tackles is nothing to shake a stick at.
And like you said, it wasn't cheap tackles, right? He was making the plays, right? Filling the right gaps, doing the things that, you know, it wasn't like when your free safety gets 19 tackles and you go, well, that was great for him, but we got the crap kicked out of us, right? That's why he got 19 tackles. So let's talk about the season as a whole, okay? Our nephew David asked this question, and you can tweet at us at BYU_Reichshout. He did. This question, did this year's football team exceed or fail to meet your expectations? Wins over P5 teams are nice, but a midseason QB swap is not. Hashtag climb on in. Matt, did this season exceed or fail to meet your expectations?
I feel like it did all three of those things. But let me tell you what I mean. Let me tell you what I mean, and okay, then you can tell me I'm a cop out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, you are, but go ahead.
Okay. So I would say it exceeded my expectations in the sense that I think that if we go back and run through what I predicted this team would do at the beginning of the season, we probably are around or maybe one win more than I would have predicted early in the year, right? So I guess that's it kind of met expectations. Exceeded expectations in the sense that we beat Wisconsin on the road, We beat Arizona on the road. And we won a bowl game, right? And at the beginning of the season, I wouldn't have predicted any of those three things, I don't think. And then the under failed to meet expectations. I'd put the box I would check there is, you know, the 45 points given up against Utah State.
Yikes.
That was really the painful one. The NIU loss, that was also extremely painful. And I would not have expected the quarterback shift halfway through the year either. I figured it was going to be the Tanner Mangum show for the season. So in some ways, it did all three. This season did all three of these things. But if you pin me into a corner and tell me I have to choose, did it meet expectations, fail, whatever, I'd say we came in about where we thought we were going to be in August.
Yeah, I think it met expectations. I think this is where we hoped we would get, you know, we'd get back to a bowl game and win it, right? So maybe it exceeded a little bit, like you said. Your prediction at the beginning of the year was 6 wins, right? And we won 7. My prediction was 7 wins and we won 7. So I would say it's pretty close to meeting. The QB change, we'll get to Wilson here more in a second. I, at the beginning of the year, thought that it was possible, but both of us thought Mangum would ride, assuming he was healthy, he would play the whole year as the quarterback and Wilson would get his shot in 2019, right? That's what we thought, both of us. Mm-hmm. We were wrong. Part of that had to do with possibly Wilson's performance in practice and how good he was. And part of that has to do with that Mangum's performance wasn't great, statistically speaking. We'll get back to our predictions here in a second, which we got a couple right, Matt. Mostly wrong, though. So the next question, the next thing we're going to do is... who were your MVP? We're going to do MVPs, Matt. Most valuable players. And I want you to get your most valuable players for offense and most valuable players for defense. So let's start with the offense. I'll go first. And I think the most valuable player for the offense this year is Zach Wilson. Matt, you got somebody different?
Oh, you got no, like, lead-in, or this is why?
Oh, this is why. The offense was good after he came in. The offense was bad before he came in. That's my in-depth explanation. And anybody who says they weren't, I get it. We had one good offensive game against a good team in Wisconsin, right? And I get that. I totally get that. And we did. We and that was not a passing game, right? It was a rushing game more than it was a passing game. And you know, we had a decent game against Cal. I mean, against Arizona, terrible game against Cal. But everything switched when Wilson came in. We've had some of the best offensive performances in the last 4 years under Wilson. And we'll get to him in a second. But I think he was the MVP. You?
So, yeah, I'm going to have to side with you and tell you that I agree that Wilson was the MVP. You know, and if you look at the defense, you know, Wilson started 7 games, Mangum started 6. And if you look at the offensive performance in those games, especially if you look at passing specific statistics, it's a completely different team.
Yeah, completely.
And I know that it's hard to compare some of the opponents, right? But at the same time, like early on, like we beat Wisconsin. Which is a pretty good defense, right? So it's not like all of Tanner's stats are bad because those teams were so good, right? The offense had some decent games against some tough defenses. But if you use the Wisconsin game as an example, right? I mean, that was, we ran the ball all day long. But Zach Wilson, and especially as a freshman to come in halfway through the season, and follow and step in for a quarterback who was a team captain, a senior, a little bit of a legend, right? Because he's got like the all the heroes tales around Tanner Mangum. The fans love Tanner Mangum. I love Tanner Mangum. But to be able to come in and become a leader on the offense and a leader on the team, and the versatility that he gave the offense at that point, there's all of those things combined. There's nobody else offensively that had that type of a contribution or that type of an impact on the offensive performance.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. So defense, I'm going to pick as my MVP Corbin Kaufusi. And the reason is he was a disruptive force this year, and I was, you know, the 7.5 sacks, second on the team in tackles. He adjusted to being, he played linebacker, he played D-line, he played multiple linebacker positions, and, you know, all due respect to Taki Taki, who you could easily make a good argument for here as well. I'm going to give it to Corbin Kaufusi. Matt?
So, do you know, all right, actually, and I think I can say this either on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just say it. Offense or defense.
Okay.
There's one player who started every single game.
Tonga?
Nope.
Taki Taki.
It is. It's Taki Taki.
Okay.
If you look at tackles made.
Lots
unassisted,
of tackles.
Unassisted tackles.
75.
Yes. And do you know what the next closest number was in the unassisted tackle category?
I do. I'm staring at it right here. But why don't you say it?
It's 38. Yeah. Okay.
That's a lot less than 75.
It's almost half. It's a little over half, right? So, but anyway, I could go on because there's in almost every column, you can have this conversation about the difference between what Taki Taki was doing and what other people were doing. And I know you can come at me with, use a lot of these statistics really favor linebackers. If you start talking about tackles, unassisted tackles, tackles for a loss, these types of things, because you don't want defensive backs making those tackles and your defensive line is really there to chew up blockers to free up space for a guy like Taki Taki to do exactly what he did. But your defense isn't going to be good unless you have somebody in that spot who can take advantage of some of these big guys up front who are eating up blockers and giving him an opportunity to get there and do it, right? It's like the Zicky and Van Noy combination, right?
Well, and they were kind of like that, right? I mean, they really were like a Zicky-Van Noy combo. I mean, not to that level, but they really were. I mean, they were able to use those two. Tuiaki was able to use them very well, moving them all over the place, and it kept defenses very much on their heels. I mean, offenses.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Well, you get like Tonga in there. If Tonga puts a center or a guard on roller skates, now you've got to put two defensive linemen on him, right? And that does give you an opportunity for somebody for Corbin to get in there with his 8.5 sacks, right? But Taki Taki really took advantage of the way this was schemed and did everything that we needed him to do. And it is tough at that level of football. And I agree with you. I think Taki Taki was banged up at some point and did slow down a little bit. The rest before the bowl game seemed to have helped. But at this level, to start all 13 games, like...
Well, that 75 solo tackles is the seventh most in program history in a single season.
Yeah. So
seventh most.
There you go.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, he had a heck of a season. He had a heck of a season. So, all right. Matt, let's talk about somebody that was let's call him a newcomer. On the offense, we both had Wilson and he's a newcomer, so that one's easy, right?
Yeah, that one's a little bit easier.
All right. So defense, though, I don't think it's quite as easy. Who's the newcomer who didn't play substantially before? They don't have to be a freshman or a transfer. Just somebody that did not play substantially before, or it could be somebody that switched positions too, to a lesser extent. Anybody you got on your list?
The guy that jumps out to me there when we talk about somebody who had not played a lot before, I think I'm going to have to go with Austin Lee.
Yeah, that's a good choice, dude.
There's a guy who came really out of nowhere, and had a pretty good season.
Yeah, yeah, he did. He did. I mean, last year he had 15 tackles, right? I mean, he was involved in a little bit, but like you said, not very much. Mine's going to be similar. It's Isaiah Kaufusi. And we had, again, he had 11 tackles last year. and 50 this year. I mean, he came in, wasn't playing even a lot at the beginning of the season, and with injuries and other things going on, he came in, and I thought he was quite good. So I thought on defense that was there as well. Who was somebody on offense, Matt, that you didn't expect to contribute besides Wilson? Let's not give Wilson everything. That did contribute in a significant way.
Well, I can tell you one person that his use did really surprise me, and I'm not saying this is the name I want to use, but I do think that just bears comment is that weird play where they have Kafensis take the snap and then flip it to somebody and turn around and run up the hole.
Yeah, what is that formation called? Is that like the wing tee or something?
That's the wing tee.
Yeah.
Which is the offense that our high school ran.
Yeah,
well, our high school ran a version of it.
What's crazy to me is that Kafensis. The cool thing about the wing tee, if you run it the way we have run it on those short yardage situations, is the quarterback becomes a blocker, right? So, like, it gives you an extra hat. It's like you have a fullback, you know, deciding who gets the ball. It's, I don't know, on that touchdown with Gumwalaku, that does not happen if Kafensis doesn't pick up the guy coming through the gap.
Right. So we used to, our high school team used to use like a wing back that would do a lot of that blocking stuff for the quarterback. But yeah, it's a weird offense. I mean, I don't think you could run it consistently at this level, but you could get away with it twice in a season on extra point conversions or inside the three. Right.
Yeah.
You put that on film too much. You know, people are going to start looking for it, especially what shocked me is that we got away with it in the bowl game. Right. The film on that was pretty recent. And so when they saw Kafensis come in, that should have been easy.
I think they just needed to call a timeout, to be honest. I think he rushed in. And, you know, we're already up by multiple touchdowns. So maybe they didn't care. But you're right. They should have seen it. But they seemed very confused.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It is what it is.
So who's your surprise guy on offense, though? It's not Austin Kafensis.
You know what? Maybe it's Riley Burt.
Boy, that game. Here's the thing. Burt finished fourth on the team in rushing, averaged 5.5 yards per carry. I'm just thinking, are you thinking, where has he been? Because I was kind of thinking with his speed, where I get it. People said he's not good at picking up pass blocks and whatever else. But I kind of feel like they should have been able to find a place for him earlier in the season.
Right. I mean, with all the talk around, you know, getting the right guy, the best athletes on the field, getting the ball in the hands of your playmakers and all of this stuff. I'm with you. I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't see a lot of him earlier. Right. You know, but if you know, what did he end up averaging? 5.5 yards per carry.
Five and a half yards per carry, and granted, 100 of his 300 yards came in that last game, right? But I don't know. I thought that the one that was a surprise to me, how much he contributed. Now this was partially due to Canada's injury, but also you know, his effectiveness when he played was Hadley. Right? I mean, he was a linebacker.
Yes.
He wasn't supposed to be contributing. You know, he's obviously, you know, at the end of his – is that true? Is he out of eligibility? Was he a senior?
Yeah, I think he's done.
I think he's a senior. 390 yards rushing, 100 yards receiving, 5.3 yards per carry, you know.
Yeah, he was a senior.
Yeah, so I mean, I look at Hadley and I think – that's not a guy I expected, and maybe a slight lesser thing to Katoa because we had heard in fall camp that he was impressive, but I didn't think he'd end up being the one that led the team in rushing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he'd, but it's got to be Hadley. I mean, and he looked pretty good as a running back. I kind of felt like that's another situation was like, well, gosh, why wasn't this guy running back his whole career, right? Like, he's pretty good at this, you know?
Yeah, but they were, you know, they felt like they had this glut at running back.
Boy, that didn't end up being true.
No, that got really weird.
So how
right?
concerned? I mean, how concerned are you? Everybody is like, we got to get a transfer, we got to do this, got to get running backs. I'm not that concerned about running back for 2019. I really am not. I'm not that concerned. I think you get Katoa back, assuming he's healthy, right? You get Riley Burt, and I don't know if Algiers any good or not. And you need a couple other guys for depth. But the chances of your top three running backs not making the bowl game because of injury, it's not really that high. I mean, running backs get hurt a lot. That's true. But I mean, we're not gonna be on our fourth and fifth running back typically during the season, right?
I'm concerned for exactly that reason. Because it happened. It happened, dude.
That's the past. So what? You can't with as many scholarships as they have running back depth that's six deep. You can't. You have to sacrifice that at other positions. We can't be six deep at any position. I don't think. I don't think you can in college football. I don't think you can be six deep unless you're Alabama, right? And you got some three-star guys that are willing to play special teams and sit back there waiting for their chance. I don't think you can be six deep, man. Now, granted, they got to get some additional players to get to six deep for next year. So that may be, a moot point. But, I mean, if Katoa's healthy all year next year and you've got Burt backing him up, is that a big deal? Or do you think you need, are you not comfortable that those two guys, if they were healthy, could carry the load?
I'm not comfortable that we can keep them healthy to carry the load. And I'm with you. I don't know how good Algier is.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, he looked okay in his couple of carries, but I don't know. I don't know.
So I think you just need one more guy. I feel like if we get in a pinch again, you're going to be doing what we did this year. You're going to go find a linebacker and flip him over, right? So or maybe it's Hodge. Maybe it's Bo Hodge. I don't know.
It's not Bo Hodge. Because if it was Bo Hodge, I guess he was dealing with some injuries too, but I mean, gosh, that was a surprise to me. Because remember in the preseason, we were like, what happens when they line up, like, bring in and put Zach Wilson in a formation with Tanner and Bo Hodge? What are they going to do? Yeah, we never saw that.
Yeah, but Bo, a couple of interesting points. Bo Hodge, I don't think, was even wearing pads in Boise. And he's still listed on the website, on the roster, as a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. He's not playing quarterback, right? And remember that stuff about it was all this big deal that we were gonna have potentially that maybe even Zach Wilson wasn't the guy, right? Remember all that?
Mm-hmm.
In fall camp and you know, there was all this talk that, you know, maybe it's actually Critchlow, right? Maybe Critchlow's the guy.
Oh, and there were all the comments about Critchlow's the future.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, and Critchlow never even saw the field, right? And with that new thing, it's not about redshirting him, right? Because you don't have to, you can play up to four games. All right, Matt. So let's look back at our predictions for the beginning of the year. You ready to do this?
Yes, actually, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let's find them here.
Maybe I shouldn't be.
Get to this. I think you did pretty well. All right. So Matt, we had any quarterback throws for more than 3,200 yards.
Oh boy, we got this one wrong.
No, you got it right. You got it right. Obviously, the leading passer this year was Zach Wilson with 1,578 yards, and we ended up – but you said no. You said that nobody would, so you win that one. I said over. I thought they would. So one win for Matt. Who leads the team in passing? We both said Tanner Mangum. Wrong. 25 passing touchdowns for the offense. Do you remember what you did?
I'm going to say I went over.
You went over, so I win that one. I went under. Yards per pass attempt, 7.5.
Ah, crap.
Do you remember what you said?
I said over.
Yards per pass attempt, 7.5. We ended up finishing at 7.4. You went under. You got that one. I went over.
Oh, sweetness. I'm a genius.
5,700 yards of total offense. We both went over. We were both wrong.
That's a disaster.
So we got that one wrong. 4.7 yards per carry rushing the football. Matt, do you remember what you said?
I bet I said under.
We both said over, because this is going to be this passing offense, right? I mean, this rushing offense, this Grimes rushing thing. It ended up being 4.1, which, by the way, isn't great. So neither of us got that one. Bushman, we both said leading receiver would be Matt Bushman. Guess who the leading receiver was?
It was Bushman.
Yay! Both in catches and yards by one catch over Hefo, by yards by a lot. So we both get that one. And Bushman, over under 65 catches, 780 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
Oh, dear.
We both said over. We were both wrong. Leading rusher, Canada. We just talked about that. Katoa was actually the leading rusher, so we both missed that one. Any running back over 750 yards, we both said over. There was not one. Defense, less than 5.5 yards, per play. And we both said over, meaning better than that. And we were both right, because they were at 4-something. So we both got that one. Would they get less than 4 yards per rush? So rushing, average per rush was 3.7. We were both right on that one, too.
Because we said
we thought the defense would be good. A leader in tackles. Guess who said Taki-Taki and who didn't?
You did, and I didn't.
You did. You had Butch Powell there. Mm-hmm. And most
that didn't go well.
Interceptions, you had Diane Gunwalaku, and I had Chris Wilcox. And, of course, the two interception group was just who we thought it would be, Austin Lee and Isaiah Kafusi. Wilcox did not, Gunwalaku did not have one, neither did Wilcox. But quite frankly, I think with Gunwalaku, it was because anytime he was in coverage man-on-man, either in the slot or in the last game or two where he was playing some corner, nobody threw his direction anyway. So, I thought Gunwalaku actually had a really good year. 39 tackles, a couple pass blocks, forced fumble. I thought Gunwalaku was actually a good year at safety. Troy Warner kind of disappeared, though. I mean, he didn't even play as much as I thought he would. And that has a lot to do with Austin Lee's performance, the aforementioned Austin Lee.
Yep.
So, Matt, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 correct. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did we tie?
There's got to be a tiebreaker.
4, 5. There's no tiebreaker here. The tiebreaker is I win. No?
I'm not sure that's how tiebreakers work.
That's exactly how tiebreakers work. That's not how tiebreakers work?
No, I don't think that's how that works.
Mm. Yep, that's how it works in this game. All right, so that's our 2018 in review. Matt, anything else you want to say about the season before we go to next season?
This season was way more fun than last season.
Oh, way more fun. Way more fun.
And way more fun.
You look at the season, Matt, and I know there were some terrible games, right? And I get it. You mentioned the Utah State game. The Utah game was this gut punch at the end. But we beat Wisconsin this year. And Arizona, who we thought was good.
It turned out to be terrible.
And we won a bowl game. It felt much, like you said, it feels way better than being 4-9 and beating nobody. Because last year, when we won 4, we beat Hawaii, Portland State, San Jose State, and UNLV. And this year, in our 7 wins, it's Arizona, Wisconsin, McNeese State, Hawaii, UMass, New Mexico State, and Western Michigan. That feels a lot better. Feels a ton better.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's talk about we're going to save recruiting for another day. We're just going to wait till the final signing day. The thing is, I'm just going to say this. Recruiting classes, I'm a little disappointed only in that when when we were told about our new coach, right? Was it now been 3 years almost? 4 years? When was he hired? When did Bronco leave? 3 years, right? This was his third year. This is his third year. So about 3 years ago, that he was going to be this amazing recruiter. I'm not seeing it, man. I'm seeing kind of like Bronco, but with better PR. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah. But here's the deal. Recruiting at BYU is always going to be different.
Oh, it's weird.
Than most of the other programs out there.
Yes.
Like, you're playing from behind for a lot of these guys. You know, what you've got to focus, I think, when you're recruiting BYU, I think there's a couple things that you focus on. You focus on finding, you get the players that are the good players that can make it at BYU and be comfortable and happy there and thrive at BYU, who in some years opt to go to other schools. You got to get those guys. You know, you got to get the Utah guys. You got to get the, you know, so these guys that would work, that are really good. The top, I'm talking about like the top LDS recruits, right? You got to get them to come to BYU. Now they can go wherever they want, right? So you've got to have a story for them. And the other is you go get players that, you know, might be looked at or thought about in one way and get them to outperform their expectations. That's where the bread and butter of success in recruiting at BYU are. So my point is, when you bring in a guy like Satake, or it's like, oh yeah, okay, he's this like really good recruiter. Like, there are players out there that nobody would convince to come to BYU. And frankly, they probably shouldn't, right? And so it's just hard to compare it to Satake recruiting at Oregon or even at Utah to what happens when you're talking about bringing players to Provo. It's just not the same. But I think your point about the PR is spot on, right? The way people perceive what he's doing versus the way people perceived what Bronco was doing, even if the caliber of athlete they bring in is largely the same, the perception is going to be miles apart.
Here's the way I think about it. If we confuse head coach with recruiting all the time, right? Like the head coach does it by themselves. But they don't, right? So Bronco, and I'm not saying he wasn't, Bronco doesn't have to be the best recruiter ever to have a staff that's good at recruiting, right? And Satake might be the best recruiter ever, and he may still not do as well as Bronco or just the same because his staff might not be as good, right? And I think recruiting is a complex thing. You've mentioned, of course, the BYU part makes it even more complex. But I will say, as we talk about this after the final signing day, I do think there's some cool things about this class. Obviously, Jacob Conover, you got a 4-star guy, so that's great. But you got a bunch of 3-star guys that I think could play out pretty well. And by the way, according to most of the services, we've got about the same quality of class as Utah got. And to me, the three schools we need to be benchmarking ourselves against, and again, like you said, it's not a fair comparison, but it is what it is Boise State, Utah, and Utah State. We need to always be better than Utah State. We need to be close to Utah. And right now, Boise's kicking all of our butts. I mean, they got 3 4-star guys in this class, right? So, you know, I just think that's kind of where it's at. All right. Let's see here. Matt, next season, all right? The Ivet man on Twitter says, how many days until spring practice? # glad I'm on a cruise and can't suffer through BYU basketball games.
Yikes.
Wow. Well, we'll get to basketball here in a second. So what do we know about this 2019 team? There was a cool article in Lawless Republic. I want to run through his points that Ron Jensen makes. These are the 5 things he believes he knows about the team next year. Number 1, and you just tell me true or false, Zach Wilson is a capable quarterback.
True.
We'll spend some more time on that in a second. Number 2, Riley Burt is still here and he's still good. True or false? True, I believe that's also true. Number three, Elisa Tuiaki is an adept defensive coordinator. True.
I don't want to say it, but it's true.
Two out of his 3 years, he's had very good defenses. Last year, it slipped back. But as we talked about, it's hard sometimes to separate defense and offense. When your offense is that terrible, your defense will often suffer some consequences, right? Number four, defensive personnel should be just as strong, if not stronger, than next season.
I'm going to say false. We don't know that yet.
I'm going to say true. I think linebacker is a question mark, but the defensive backfield, I think, is still going to be very strong, and I think it's one of the things we didn't talk enough about this year is how good they were. And I think that defensive line is getting better and better and did throughout the season, and Tonga's a one-man wrecking crew. And he could have been our defensive MVP. We hardly talked about him because he was constantly double-teamed, right? And that enables, as you did mention this, Taki Taki being able to get 100-something tackles, right? So I'm going to say true, but with a caveat that it might not be true. But based on what we've seen, I think it's true. But you think it's false.
Yeah, let me just throw something out here for you. Okay. Because I think you kind of glossed over the linebacker situation, but let's talk about the linebacker situation for just a second. The roster right now lists, okay, let's see. I think it's, 16 linebackers? 16 linebackers. All right.
Okay.
Six of those are seniors.
Okay.
One sophomore. The rest of them are freshmen. Like, there is not a Taki Taki apparent on this list. And I don't know where they go to backfill, right? Because you got to have like a dozen linebackers to run this defense. And I don't know where they go to get the rest of these linebackers. But there is not a heir apparent on this list. Maybe Isaiah Kafusi, who's the lone sophomore.
I think Kafusi.
That makes me nervous.
That's a legit concern. I'm not saying it's not. But I think there's a decent, better than decent chance that they're better or just as good. And I think there's, Kafusi ended up playing linebacker some this year. Maybe Devin's going to move back into linebacker, right? Like his brother. I don't know. We'll see. Number five on his list was offensive line has a bright future. Matt, true or false?
True.
I'm going to say false. They weren't that good this year. They're young, so I hope it's true. But young doesn't necessarily mean they're better next year.
Yeah, but they had some young guys who I feel like showed some flashes against some decent defensive lines and got a ton of experience.
Yes, all of those things are true. I hope I'm wrong, but I can say even in the Western Michigan game, the beginning of that game, they played really poor. I mean, there were guys just getting through, and I don't know if Western Michigan was given some looks that they hadn't done all year, but there were a couple. There seems to be a lot of unblocked guys, with two guys standing around with their hands out, not blocked while another guy walks past them. Right. So I have to say one of my disappointments this year with Grimes was I thought this offensive line would be the strength of the offense. Right. We'd be this rush team. And we did have that game against Wisconsin where it seemed like we got there. And the rest of the year, they struggled to open up holes for the running backs against any quality of a defense. So I don't know. I'm a little split on that one, I guess.
That's fair.
Kind of like you are with the defense. Let's see. We're like 52 minutes into this show and we haven't even talked about basketball yet, which maybe is on purpose. So Matt Wilson. Okay. Let's talk about Wilson for next year. Jeff Johnston at Jeff J BYU says, how many Super Bowl victories will Zach Wilson lead BYU to next season? Over under 3.5. I'm going to go under, but just barely.
Oh, gee off.
I'm going to go under. At CougFan82 says, bowl game has BYU Nation geeking out for 2019. Convince us that Frosh Wilson is going to turn out any different than Frosh Mangum and Heaps. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag jaded, hashtag climb on in. Randy Whittle has something very similar on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. He says, What are the chances of a sophomore slump with Zach Wilson? It seems like Jake Heaps had a similar trajectory his freshman year, too. So, Matt, it's time for one of Adam's classic rants. Are you ready?
I love it. Oh, I love it because I know where you're going.
Warming up. Okay, here we go, guys. And it's a legitimate question, right? Because we've had two fairly highly recruited quarterbacks, though, as I've talked about before, Mangum was on a different level recruiting-wise than Heaps or Wilson, okay? And I know Heaps liked to pump himself up with you know, press conferences and the like, but he was not like a super highly recruited
Heaps,
like
listen, that. Listen, he was good. This was is good nothing recruiter. Personal against Heaps, but no. Heaps was a paper tiger, and who was a product of a hype machine.
Okay. Yes. And
just, that's just the fact.
Yeah. That's just the fact. He was a good recruit, not a great one. Okay. All right. So Heaps was not good his freshman year. Okay, that is the narrative that somehow got created. I don't know where it happened, but everyone's like, oh, he had one of the best freshman years in BYU history. BYU had never hardly played freshman quarterbacks besides Ty Detmer. I mean, very, very few freshmen had played at BYU.
I mean, who's the other that played as a freshman? Drew Miller?
Yeah, it's just like it's stupid. It was a stupid narrative in 2010, and the fact that it stayed, I don't know why it stayed. Okay, but here are the numbers. Against terrible teams, He played a terrible schedule at the end of that year. 57% completion percentage. Good or bad, Matt? Bad at the college level. 6 yards per pass attempt, Matt. Good or bad?
I'm going to say bad.
Bad. 42.5 total QBR. That's the ESPN one that takes in rushing and also adjusts for your strength of your schedule. He was ranked 83rd in the country, Matt. Do you want the 83rd? Ranked quarterback, does that make you feel good going into the next year?
No, thanks. I'll pass.
All right. So, Mangum's freshman year, totally different. 60% completion, 7.6 yards per attempt, 23 touchdown passes, by the way, and his 70.7 QBR was good for 29th in the country. We were all stoked about Mangum, right? We were all stoked about Mangum, and you know, there was even the question whether who would play the next year between him and Taysom Hill, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that was 2015. Zach Wilson, 66% completion percentage, 8.7 yards per attempt, which is the most we've had a quarterback average, I think, since the 80s. I'm joking, but it feels that way. Since the days of, you know, Max Hall. And his 65.4 QBR was good for 48th in the country and improved substantially over the last few games. Matt, this isn't Heaps. This isn't anything like Heaps. Wilson isn't Heaps. He didn't play like Heaps. Heaps is a myth that he was a good quarterback freshman year. He was not. He played a poor, below-average quarterback freshman year. And we were on the show, if you remember, going into 2011 season, everyone was like, Heaps this and Heaps that. And I was like, slow the Heaps train down, right? 8 years ago. And it's because he didn't actually play anybody, but we won a bunch of games against terrible teams to end the year, right, in 2010. And we could have done the same thing with Christian Stewart. Oh, we did a few years later, right? So Matt, how do you feel about my rant?
I can't disagree with what you said.
All right. The question really is Mangum. Mangum had a great freshman year and has never been able to replicate it, and I can't explain it. But I don't think there's a jinx. He had three different offensive coaching staffs for Mangum. I don't think Wilson's going to have anything like him, and I don't know that drawing the comparison between Mangum freshman to sophomore and Wilson freshman to sophomore is at all helpful, to be honest.
The only thing they share in common is they're both quarterbacks at BYU, right? Like, that is the only – and they're both from Idaho. No, Wilson's not even from Idaho, right?
Wilson's from Utah.
So, right. So they don't share anything in common. There's nothing similar about their styles, the offense that they're playing in. None of these things are similar. But I will say this about Tanner Mangum, because I think that this needs to be observed, right? You could do a whole show on the Tanner Mangum story. But the Tanner Mangum experience is just – it's bizarre. Right. So he comes in his freshman year because the starting quarterback suffers this Liz Frank injury in the first game of the year. Like, Mangum was not supposed to see the field that
right.
year.
Like, no, yeah, not at all.
Nobody had prepared for that. Nobody had set up for that or anything. And then he came out and had statistically a pretty solid season, as you've just recapped for all of us, and lost the starting job. Right?
Yes.
And then had waited 2 years and then came back out and did it again. And then, you know, there was injury and all these other things. I mean,
but
he
didn't play well last year in 2017.
I'll give you that. But I mean, the Tanner Mangum story is a weird one, especially when you throw in the coaching changes.
Yeah, yeah. And Wilson will be, unlike Mangum after his freshman year, where it was who's going to be the quarterback in 2016, right?
There's no question.
Wilson is the quarterback. There's not going to be a debate. I know people are talking about, well, Hall looked really good towards the end of the year.
Oh, my gosh, stop
it. Practice, and maybe in spring ball he can take over. No, Hall's going to redshirt, and with Conover coming in, I mean, Hall's going to play if Wilson gets hurt or turns into a pumpkin, right? And none of that do you want to happen, right? Right, and that's nothing against Hall, right?
Don't want anyone to turn into a pumpkin. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's very painful. But the thing is, Mangum, I don't know what happened to Tanner. I mean, he does not – his arm strength, which was – one of the things about his freshman year, when he threw for 300 yards, kind of disappeared. He couldn't throw the deep ball the last 2 years.
His mechanics took a strange turn and started looking weird.
Yeah, not like they
there
had.
There are facts to this story that I believe that are not publicly known.
Yeah, it could be injuries, could be other things. So to Coop Fan 82 and to Randy, what I would say is this. It's a great question, for sure. I just think the Heaps thing – is Heaps was not on a similar trajectory to Wilson. Wilson is on a much better trajectory. Yes, he and Mangum are on a similar one, potentially, but the story is just going to be very different. So Drew Troutner at Drewski5 on Twitter has this question. After watching two seasons with the offense under Mangum versus under Wilson, do you think the tale of two seasons? Sorry, Drew. Do you think last year's offensive struggles were more due to scheme or due to personnel at the quarterback position? Do you think Detmer would still be the offensive coordinator if Wilson played last year? #TweetBag. No, I don't. Matt?
No. The short answer to that is no.
I think Wilson as a senior or junior or senior, maybe. But no, I don't. I think Grimes's offensive scheme this year, even with Mangum, was an improvement over Detmer's. Statistically, that was true, right? But even with the eye test, I think that was true, right?
Yep.
All right, Matt. Real quick, we're going to predict the 2019 season. Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
I got into it with this guy on Twitter who's basically saying we're all smoking dope if we think BYU is going to sniff 6 wins next year. Because he's saying how hard the 2019 schedule is. Let's do a reality check on that, Matt. The 2019 schedule is about exactly the same hard as this year's schedule was. Okay? So stop, everybody. Okay? Because you're looking at the names and you're not thinking about how good these teams actually are. Okay? So we'll get to some of those folks. Matt, opening against Utah, win or loss?
It's a loss.
Okay. At Tennessee, win or loss?
It's a win.
They're not very good. One of the games everyone's like, that's a given loss on the road. What, have they watched Tennessee over the last few years?
Probably not.
USC at home, win or loss?
I think that might be a win, actually.
I think that's a win. Washington in LaBelle, that's a loss.
That's a loss.
Yeah. At Toledo, tough one, but I'm going to say a win.
Sure.
At UCF, I'm going to say a win.
USF, and that's a win.
Yeah, whoever. They're in Florida. Directional Florida schools. So 4-2. We're both predicting 4-2 at that point. Boise State, that's a loss.
Yep.
4-3. At Utah State, I think that's a win.
I'm going to say it's a loss.
Okay, so you're at something, and I'm at something. I don't know. I lost track. Liberty is a win. Idaho State's a win. At UMass is a win. At San Diego State is a win. Okay? So you're going to win those last four games regardless because all of those teams are terrible. Okay, so really the season is going to come down to what you can do with Tennessee, USC, Boise State, and Utah State, I think. And maybe Boise shouldn't be in that group. Maybe it
but
should
even
just be...
if you take those out of it, right, the last four games are wins. You
wins.
Only have to beat – to get to six wins, you're talking about you got to beat Toledo and USF.
You have to get like, 2 wins to start the year in that stretch. And you're going to get more than 2 wins. You're going to beat somebody in that stretch. Heck, BYU almost beat Utah, you know, a couple weeks ago, right? Like, we beat Wisconsin on the road last year. I think this pessimism over this, it's like people want Satake to fail so they can fire him and move on to the next guy to complain about, right?
Like, yeah, but guess what, folks? There is no next guy.
But it doesn't – I want Satake to win. I want him to be successful. Like, I wanted Bronco to be successful. Sometimes I find fandom so weird. Why do people want him to fail? Like, he's a former BYU player, for heaven's sakes, right? Like, why would, like, I didn't want Detmer to fail as an offensive coordinator. I wanted him to succeed. He's freaking Ty Detmer, right? And, you know, but in the end, Satake's job isn't, he's not on the hot seat. And if he wins 7 games again next year with this schedule, he's not going to be on the hot seat again.
But here's how people get sucked into that, Adam. People get sucked into that like this. They want him to come in and blow the doors off it and take us into, like, Big 12 invite after year one. And when that doesn't happen, they're like, oh, he's not going to get us there. We need to hurry up and get him fired.
Well, yeah. But
because the expectations, where the place where they're starting out is really the problem.
Here's the problem also. The Big 12 invite isn't coming if we're undefeated.
The Big 12 invite is never coming.
Right. It's not coming
not
because
going.
Of success on the field.
We're not going to the P5, guys.
We already did this in the 80s and 90s and then in the mid-2000s, right? We already did this 3 times where on-field success should have earned us into the P5, right? We have earned our way, BYU has, on the field. But that's not where these decisions are made, right? Colorado got into the Pac-12. Right? That was not based on football success, right?
It was because they're a research institution.
Yeah. Rutgers got into the Big Ten. Not because they had a decent run of football success, but they did not get in because of that. Maryland did not get in. They got in for other reasons, right?
For poor reasons about TV markets, but yes, other reasons.
But it doesn't matter, right? In the end, these conferences can make whatever decision they want, even if they're bad. Right.
I think that's part of my point, right? Is the reality of whatever their criteria are don't even really matter.
So,
right. It's the perception of whatever their list of criteria happen to be. And the two places where we feel like geographically or whatever, we're most likely are the Pac-12. And guess what, folks? Spoiler alert. Never going to happen.
Big 12.
And the Big 12, which is also never going to happen.
I think the Big 12 could happen. I don't think it's likely. And I think the most likely Big 12 scenario is actually the Big 12 without Texas and or Oklahoma. Right? They lose one of those schools and they panic, right? And try to keep the band together, right? But regardless, we don't need to get into that tonight as we're already over an hour. But here's the thing about 2019. This guy on Twitter was saying that the most likely scenario was 2 wins. And I'm just like, that's nuts.
That's nonsense.
That's nuts. The most likely scenario is probably 6, right? Or maybe 7 might be the most likely scenario. There's an upside chance of 8 or 9. I don't think that's the likely scenario. But I think if this offense were to come out kicking it and you beat Utah and Tennessee to start the season – which I don't think is ridiculous. I don't think that's the likely thing, right? Then all of a sudden you're 2-0. At that point, you probably win 8 games because you're going to win at least 6, right? Right? Because of those last 4 games. So if you win a couple games early in that schedule, you're going to win 8 games, right? And I think that's possible. Now, like I said, the most likely scenario is probably 7 wins before the bowl game. So with the upside of 8. Because this isn't an easy schedule, right? Washington's tough. Tennessee, even though they're not great, it's on the road. Boise State, Utah State, I called it a win. They were really good this year. So, you know, if they're as good as they were last year, that's probably a loss. I think they're going to fall back substantially. I don't know what happened to Gary Anderson, but I don't think he's the coach he was when he was there the first time. So I think they take a step backwards. And I wouldn't have believed that. If you had told me like 3 years ago that Matt Wells, I would think, is a better coach than Gary Anderson. Nothing against Wells, right? But Anderson had had success, you know, that Wells had not. So anyway. All right, Matt, let's quickly talk about basketball, which I don't really want to. So they lose to San Diego State. And Gary has this lament, Gary Payne at Fast Break GP. Is there some law in the universe that keeps BYU sports success at a certain level? Seems there's an inverse relationship between b-ball frustrating losses and impressive win by the football team. Hey, Don, any laws of the universe insights from Klingon? I think he thinks Don is a Klingon. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag.
Don might be a Klingon. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, he served his mission there. We've talked about that. Jay Drew in the Tribune, basically, he says, BYU has lost six games before Christmas for the first time since joining the West Coast Conference. Matt, this program is not trending in the right direction.
No, this is not good, everybody. This is what it's like to watch the wheels come off of something.
I don't know if the wheels are coming off, but
the wheels are coming off this season.
But oh, yes. Here's the thing. We're going to finish fourth in the West Coast Conference. San Francisco is better than we are today. Now, that can change. Things are fluid, like the Aquaman movie. And by the way, Jeff, Andre, I got the reference to last week to, was it Christmas Story? What did you make a reference to?
Christmas Story.
You made it. I got the reference, and we were just like over time, and I had to go. Because Matt can do his jokey joke. I gotta move. I'm running the show. I totally missed the reference, dude. I felt terrible afterwards.
I was like, "How did he miss that?"
He slipped it in there, and I totally missed it. I feel frame. Anyway, by the way, did you see? Was it Damian Lillard came in to his Christmas game holding one of the leg lamps?
Was hilarious. But it was his own leg.
Was it his own leg?
It was his leg with his shoe on it.
Oh, I thought he was holding a lamp.
It was a lamp. It was a leg lamp, but it was his leg. Oh, not the fishnet stocking red heel leg. His leg with his shoe on it.
I just saw
it's flipping
highlight.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Anyway, okay. So, here's the thing. It's like we said last week. Yoli Childs is having a very good year. TJ Haws is having a very good year. Both of them are better than they were last year, and the rest of the team is not. And the solution is simple. The defense has to not be terrible, which it has been so far this season, especially against three-point shooting. For whatever reason, we cannot guard three-point shooting. And the offense is fine. The offense is okay. They're not great. But if the defense got better, this could have been the year we were second in the West Coast Conference, right? This could have been the year. All we need to have is a decent defense. But I don't know that we have the personnel to put that together. And Emery has just been okay. So kind of up and down since he got back. And that San Diego State loss, I mean, we've got two losses in a row where we had a much better second half than first half. But it didn't matter because the first half was so terrible. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know if wheels – I wouldn't use that phrase, though it probably fits. This is not going to be a good year for us. I just don't, unless Emery or somebody else, Harding or somebody on Baxter, somebody on there, and I should just start making up last names at this point, but somebody's got to step up. And quite frankly, probably two or three or four guys have to step up because Childs and Haws can't do this by themselves. There's no really good team in the country that has just two guys that are playing above average college basketball. And right now, that's what we got. And that's, you don't win when you do that.
No.
So, and like I said, San Francisco's played really well. They've lost one game to Buffalo in overtime, I think, right? They look like a legit tournament team at this point. They look like someone that's going to be with the resume they put together, if they can, you know, split with Gonzaga and St. Mary's during conference play, they might be having the season I thought BYU could have, which is unfortunate, but hats off to them, right? And it's good for the West Coast Conference, but it's not good for us. It's not good for BYU.
No, it'd be a lot more fun if we were the team.
If we were the team with one loss at this point, right? Well, this has been one of our longest shows ever, so we're gonna move on.
There's that.
We're gonna move on, but here's the thing: it's not really, because you can split this up between 2 weeks because we're not recording next week.
There you go.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to take a week off. We are going to try to do halftime shows where I just do it and Matt, for some reason, can't participate when we play Gonzaga. So the first one of those is about a little over a month away. January 31st, I think, is the game against Gonzaga.
So, yep.
Anyway, Matt, anything you want to add before we sign off?
No, I'm good. I've pretty much said it all.
Really? You've said it all?
This is all I have to say.
I thought you would have more to say.
Sorry to disappoint you.
That is kind of,
actually, I'm not sorry to disappoint
you. That is kind of disappointing. Are you doing a Mary Poppins triathlon? No, there's only two of them.
What are you talking about?
Like a marathon Mary Poppins. Are you going to watch them back to back? Watch the first one, go to the second one in the theater? Are you doing that this week?
That hadn't been in the plan.
Time to put it on the plane, you know?
Perhaps we will do that.
Spoonful full of sugar helps the medicine go down, brother.
That's actually true.
That's true. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can, of course, always check us out on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. You can email the show at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Subscribe to us on iTunes, all that jazz. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!